Welcome to Does the Team Think with Arthur Askey, Ted Ray, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And now we have Mrs. Lola Watson with us, and Mrs. Lola Watson will put this question to you.
If the team had to add one more commandment to the ten, what would it be?
If the team had to add one more commandment to the ten, what would it be?
Thou shalt not put buttons in the collection.
Arthur Askey. Arthur Askey.
Well, it's like the vicar. He was in the pulpit and he said to the congregation, I have mislaid my umbrella somewhere. If any of my parishioners know where it is, I'd be very obliged. Then he went on with his sermon and got to the Ten Commandments. And when he got to the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, he said, oh, don't bother about the umbrella. I remember where I left it.
I think there should be an extra one for Moses called Keep Taking the Tablets.
Jimmy Edwards.
He'll be coming round the mountain when he comes.
Jimmy Edwards.
He was talking about stories about the vicar. Reminds me of the vicar who told the story about the two spiders who said, where can we go and make love together? And the other one said, let's go into the offertory box. That's the quietest place, he said. I'll be serious for a minute. If she really wants... I mean, I forget what the Ten Commandments are all about. There's nothing about booze in it, is there?
Yes.
Yes, there is. There is.
Thou shalt not booze.
No, Jimmy, thou shalt give up drinking or thou will surely go bankrupt.
so long since I read the good book. Is there really one about
drinking? No, there's not, Jim. You can make one up.
Well, no, I would... Thou shalt not smoke to the detriment of other people is the one that I would put in, because
otherwise you'll finish up in a coffin.
No, I'm...
You will be coffined.
I am a fervent non-smoker. And I think that people who smoke in the presence of other people are pigs.
The hazard of smoking with a moustache like that. Of course he can't smoke. He'd catch fire.
Mrs. Watson, have you thought of any additions to the Ten Commandments?
Well, I only thought of a serious one.
Let's have a serious one and they'll make a mess of it.
Thou shalt honour the old folk, making them thy loving concern at all times.
Well, Ted always has that regard for Jimmy Edwards.
I appreciate that.
When you look at this panel, it's most understandable, isn't it?
Thou shalt help old ladies across the street, even when they do not wish to go.
When they wish to go, help them across quick. But
thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mrs. Watson. Thank you.
I said, off.
And now, team, you're going to meet Mr. Albert Conway. You've now met him, so let's hear Mr. Albert Conway's question.
Have members of the team had any amusing or embarrassing experiences when giving a fan their autograph?
Have members of the team had any amusing or embarrassing experiences when giving a fan their autograph?
Well, you know, they often come up to you and say, could you autograph my plaster, you know. Plaster,
oh, yes, that's right.
Plaster cards, but when it's the pelvis, it's very embarrassing.
I had one last year. I opened a garden fete at Herne Bay.
Oh, yeah.
And I've written autographs on, even on a pair of kippers once. Will you believe that? A pair of kippers. But this was the beauty queen, and she asked, at least the gentleman who was organising the thing, said, would you sign your autograph for her? I said, yes. And I had to sign it on her thigh. I didn't know where to put the full stop.
I went to Hernia Bay. I stayed in a truss house.
It's a funny thing about autographs. People often say it can be boring, especially when you've been a great star like me for so many years. it does get a bore. But after all, your fans are your fans. You've got to look after them. And I remember, rather on a serious note, in this very studio, ITMAR used to be broadcast for many years. And I can still see dear old Dorothy Summers upstairs with the crowd round her, and they're saying, give us your autograph, Mrs. Mopp. And she kept saying, I am not Mrs. Mopp. I won't sign till you tell me what my real name is. And nobody knew it.
It's lovely to be asked someone's autograph, but it's a little irritating when they ask you as a sort of afterthought. Oh, here it is. You might as well have it.
Yeah. And well, it isn't for me. That's the great
that's
one.
That's the one, yes.
It's it for isn't me for me.
But I was just going to tell you, I was in a show once with a great singing star called Tommy Steele. Yes. And, of course, there was always a big crowd outside waiting for Tom. Mm-hmm. And when I went out, they'd say...
Sometimes they got it, didn't they?
Oh, well, we might as well have Jim. We might as well have him, you know, while that...
Yeah,
so one night, I just kicked the door open very wide, so they jumped back and ran out, you see. And I jumped in the car, and I was driving away, and a lady came running after me. She said, "We didn't want yours anyway."
The first time I ever played the London Palladium, my name wasn't very big on the bills.
Never has been, has
I was,
it, really?
I was sharing a line with the printer.
And it was very low down, and all the dogs passed an opinion on it. You remember?
They were all critics, that's quite true, Arthur. And this lady came up to me, and she was pushed away by a little boy, and he said, "Come on, I'm first, come on, sign it, mate, sign it." So I wrote down, "Best wishes, sincerely yours, Ted Ray." It was a new thing for me, you see, signing autographs. And the kid looked at me, walked across to the bill, had a good look down, saw where my name was, and promptly tore it out of his autograph book. That's true.
It reminds me of when I was on tour with Bandwagon. We were playing Portsmouth Hippodrome, which was bombed shortly afterwards. It was during the early days of the blackout, and I came out, and he was pitch black, and my eyes are not too good. And there weren't many people hanging about after the show in those days with the blackout when they wanted to get home. But I kept getting pieces of paper handed to me, and I was signing and signing, and I thought, well, it seems rather quiet, till I heard a sort of giggling. And by this time, my eyes were getting used to it, and Dickie Murdoch and the stage manager, just the two of them, were handing me bits of paper, which I signed, and they just tore up and threw on the floor. I was knee-deep in confetti by the time I'd finished.
I was once asked for my autograph by somebody on a blank cheque. And I said, "Hey," I said, "this isn't very fair," I said. "You could fill in a cheque for any amount." He said, "You're not that rich."
I came out of the theatre one day and I saw Wilfred Hyde White. And he was surrounded
by... To name
by...
three.
Yeah, he was surrounded by a crowd of people, and he was a very fine actor, as you know. And he was writing this, and it was so fast, he went... You know... And this lady looked at this, and she said to me, "What shall I do with this?" I said, "Take it to a chemist, he'll make it up."
I can tell you what about that. When Peter Madden was the sort of compere of the show, and Peter came out of the stage door one night, he'd had some friends, so he was very late coming out, and there was just one woman standing there, and as he came out, she said to him, "Are you anybody?"
He said, "Thank you, team."
What do you mean, am I anybody? She yes. said, "Was you in the show?" He said, "Yes." She said, "Which one was you?" He said, "Well, I was the compere, Peter Madden." She said, "Oh, all right, then," and gave him a book. So he looked at it and he said to her, "Here, would you like Sir Laurence Olivier's autograph?" She said, "Oh, yes." So he wrote in there on her page, "Sir Laurence Olivier," and she said, "Oh, thank you very much." He went off highly delighted.
Thank you, team, and thank you very much, Mr. Albert Conway. Thank you, Mr. Conway. And now, team, we turn our attention to Mrs. Phyllis Elvey. Mrs. Elvey, welcome to the programme. Your question, please.
If the team had unlimited cash to design their own houses, how would they go about it and what special features would they incorporate?
If the team had unlimited cash to design their own houses, how would they go about it and what special features would they incorporate?
A circular bed, actually, because then you can get in it from all angles.
Oh, yeah. Because you fall out from all angles.
Well, I mean, you can lurch through the door, and there it is in the middle of the room. Whichever way you hit it, your head's in the middle.
Circular bed. That's
entirely circular, very wide bed.
I would like our audience here to know that these three fellas live in lovely homes. Jim's got a lovely farm and a flat in the West End. Ted's got a gorgeous house with garden. Siddles is out of this world. It's really beautiful. And I am living in a two-room dump in Kensington. Now, where did I go wrong, apart from Paddington Recreation?
And you know something? I'll tell you something. I've been to Arthur's flat. Even the mice are born round-shouldered.
The team... only house in his price range is occupied by a family of wrens.
Team, I want to turn my attention to Mrs. Elvey.
You dirty beast.
Well, naturally. Mrs. Elvey, if you were a designer and had to design houses for these gentlemen, can you think of any appropriate sort of addition that you might make?
I want four separate rooms. A small music room
for
Mr. Ray to fiddle and fall with me in.
Oh, I say.
Anytime.
A well-stocked bar for Mr. Edwards.
Lovely.
Won't stay that way long, I promise you.
For Sir Fletcher, a comfy lounge for his odd odes. And Arthur, well, he's very keen on photography. So I want a small dark room. And then we might develop more than films with life.
I tell you what you should do with Arthur. Sit him on your knee and practice ventriloquism.
Arthur could be in the garden on the lawn, one of those little...
little gnomes.
Oh, there's no place like Arthur's gnome. Well, you know, I knew a fellow in Liverpool and he won the first prize on the treble chance. And he got a fortune and he gave up his work... And he bought this magnificent house, and suddenly he felt very lonely. So one day he decided to go down and bring one of his pals, and he was showing him round, and they came round the garden, and they saw a sundial. And this little fellow said, "What's that, Fred?" And he said, "Well, it's a sundial." He said, "I've never seen one of them." "What does it do?" He said, "Well, you see, when the sun shines down across that little piece of metal, it points to the figure... And it tells you the time. For instance, now, it's 3:15. He said, "What will they think of next?"
I tell you, one of the novelty I had in the house, which caused a bit of a stir when we ordered it.
A teaspoon.
Oh, Ted's back with us.
He's getting better.
Never mind the legs, the brain's still working.
I'm talking through my legs. I'm the $6 million man.
No, we ordered a bidet, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Because we saw it in a brochure.
To wash your feet.
No.
And other things, yes.
And it's, unhappily, the plumber who fixed it didn't get his pressures right. I could have been up there like a ping pong ball for hours.
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mrs. Phyllis Elvey. Thank you, Mrs. Elvey. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest. For so many years, one of the very top names in the world of British bands. The man who's kept the nation dancing. A warm welcome, please, for Joe Loss. Cyril Fletcher. Will you please put Arthur Askey down?
We were only doing the Valita.
I know. Joe Loss, in the mood I hope you are to put your question.
Well, as you may know, my signature tune is In the Mood.
How did we guess?
But what signature tunes would the members of the team suggest for each other?
All right.
And also for other prominent members.
What signature tune would members of the team suggest for each other and for other prominent figures?
Well, I will bet you, Mac and Joe, I bet you now that I know all their signature tunes.
Tell us.
Well, Jimmy's is I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles.
Right.
Arthur, as the whole world knows, is... Come on.
Big-hearted Arthur, they call me. Big-hearted
I should finish on that.
It tells you the age of the audience, doesn't it?
And here's a big... Mine is You Are My Sunshine, but Cyril's...
Why?
Pardon?
Why?
Well, Ray of Sunshine.
Oh, Ray of Sunshine.
And they still haven't got it, you see. They still haven't got it. All these years of waste. But Cyril is the entry of the gladiators. Is that right?
We never get to that bit.
My applause would take me right through that. Well,
yeah. I think Cyril's with those spectacles should be "I'll be seeing you."
I think Arthur should be "I'm looking under a four-leaf clover."
That's right.
That's lovely.
I think you've all had a turn. I'm going to have Joe.
I had a bit of a turn just then, as a matter of fact.
I think that it's Joe's turn now. Joe, you may have had one or two hints from members of the team.
Mac,
can you think of any particular signature tunes that they might choose?
Well, of course, our panel, who, incidentally, can I come in on a serious note?
Because
this is a program which gives so much pleasure to millions of people. No. Let me be serious.
Yeah, be serious.
And they give us a smile. It's something that you can... A greater therapy, you ask any doctor.
Could we have Mr. Loss on the program?
Long may they reign to give us this enjoyment that we have in our
home. Well done, yes.
Now, but...
But the trouble is, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate all those wonderful words from Joe, and he's the most sincere man I know. I've known him for years. He is a wonderful man. I believe you started as a double act with a fortune teller. Wasn't it? Was it a double act called Profit and Loss?
Funny thing about these signature tunes, the great thing is to have your own signature tune. Because I remember, do you remember Suzette Terry? You know, red sails in the sunset.
I didn't know he was leaving.
I was comparing a show on a Sunday night, one of these one-offs, and Susie was on the bill, and there was a band on the bill, and the band leader said, you can't sing that red sail, you can't have that, because I'm playing it, it's already in the programme. And Susie said, well, it's been associated with me for years, and I thought there was going to be a punch-up about red sails in the sunset. Anyway, they were arguing the toss. What time there was an accordionist on the stage who just finished playing Zampa or something, and then he went in, red sails in the sunset. Have your own signature tune.
Jimmy Edwards.
This will amuse you, Arthur, because the first time I ever went to Australia, I went to play the Tivoli, Sydney.
The Tiv.
And as I walked down the stalls for the rehearsal, the band leader made an... obviously a little joke. He's, okay, fellas, 1, 2, 3, 4. Much
Barney
in the Marsh. So I went on the stage and I said, what do you play that for? We thought you'd feel at home. I said, I was never in it. He said, okay, fellas, scrub it.
Barney in the Marsh.
Got the wrong signature tune.
Must have been on a diet of cheese.
You know who had the very first signature tune in show business?
Tell us, Arthur.
Tettle now. Albert Whelan,
that's right.
He used to whistle.
La la la,
la, la, la yup. Ba-da. He used to whistle beautifully, and I was on the bill with him once at Chiswick Empire, and I stood in the wings and sucked a lemon, and he had it halfway through, true.
I think the greatest signature tune, with all due respects to Joe and all these great band leaders, they've all gone. Joe's the only one treasure we have left now.
I was the end of the line, the youngest. Was it?
I think the most appropriate signature tune was Jack Payne's. Say it with music.
And in spite of the fact that it's somebody else's signature tune, thank you, Joe Loss. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, team. Mrs. Margaret Fern, may we have your question, please?
What does the team think is the most boring topic of conversation to listen to at a party?
What does the team think is the most boring topic of conversation to listen to at a party?
Arthur.
Isn't that Margaret?
His friend.
Well, I was just going to say...
He brings out his scrapbook.
When somebody says, isn't Jimmy Edwards marvellous? Isn't Ted Ray great? Isn't Cyril Fletcher wonderful? I find that very boring.
I think when they talk about their operations is worst. They say, I was cut on the bias.
Bias this, bias that.
I know a woman who's had so many operations, she's fitted a zipper.
When they removed the stitches, she went to pieces.
But you see, the question is, I don't think Mrs. Fern...
Sorry.
I don't...
I feel better now.
Jimmy Edwards.
Quite phrased the question correctly, if you don't mind me saying so, because you said topics of conversation to listen to. I don't listen to people. I talk. I don't listen to people talking at parties. They listen to me. They have to.
Very difficult to talk with a glass in your mouth.
I take it out from time to time.
Do you?
Just to refill it.
Yeah, but don't you understand, Jimmy... Jimmy,
But you must be a good party, because
the parties you go to are hunt balls, and if there's anything more boring than a hunt ball with their chat about the horses and the fox.
That's because they're not interested in horses.
But what is worse is the smell.
I went to a hunt ball recently, and the lady master, what we call a madam master, sent the waiter over to ask me for a dance. And for a waiter, he danced very well.
He's fitted that in well, didn't he?
One thing I've never understood, Jimmy, they say, have a stirrup cup. How the hell can he drink out of a stirrup?
Well, I think the most boring talk, let's face it, boys, is pro talk. A lot of pros talking can be boring. I mean, I met a fellow last week and he said to me, he said, you know, I was at Manchester last week and I absolutely killed them. The week before, I was at Bradford. I absolutely slayed them. The week before that, I was at Bournemouth. And, oh, he said, you were on the bill. There weren't a lousy audience.
And Arthur said, yes, but not for me.
In a general party, for me, the most boring thing is when we get onto slimming. Everybody talks about dieting these days.
Yes.
Well, even the thin people who are trying to get fat.
One finds that when a woman starts an awful lot of chat at a party, it's a monologue. And when two women get together, it's a catalogue.
And when they're going on the holidays, it's a travelogue.
I think ailments, as Cyril said, are the main topic at parties. Everyone's, you know... A woman said to me, she was telling me all about her heart and about her liver and her kidneys, finished up as an organ recital.
And you know, Arthur's so right about this. He is so right about this. You say to somebody, you go to a party, they say, how are you? And they tell you. And then you're in trouble, you move away.
Mrs. Amazing. Fern, what would bore you at a party in conversation?
Cars, I think.
Cars.
Yeah,
that would bore you because you don't know about cars. If you came to a party in my house and I said, as a matter of fact, I'm using a Scamperdale Pelham at the moment, you'd wonder... How many people in this audience know what a Scamperdale Pelham is?
Must they don't get much scamper, you see.
There's one farmer down there.
Is it? Well, I'm driving at the moment. I'm driving a Rolls Canardly.
Oh, can
it rolls down one hill and Canardly get up the other.
They won't give you another one as an advertisement after that.
I mean...
Jim, what was that other thing you mentioned?
Scamperdale Pelham.
What do you use it for, cows?
It's a type of bit that you put in a horse's mouth.
Oh, I see.
Invented by a man who lived on a farm called Scamperdale.
How interesting.
I knew you'd love that.
He was
that.
On the farm having a bit, and he...
And as a matter of fact...
He's scampered away.
There's another one which the police use called a reversible Pelham. What about that?
Oh, it goes backwards. I've never had a bit that goes backwards.
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mrs. Margaret Fern. Thank you, Mrs. Margaret Fern. Team, you're looking at Steve Herbert, and Steve Herbert is looking at you before he puts his question, and this is it.
If an earthquake or some other disaster left a team and one pretty girl as the only survivors on our island, how would they organise their lives?
You are asking for trouble, Mr. Herbert. If an earthquake or some other disaster left the team and one pretty girl as the only survivors on our island, how would they organise their lives?
Start a
queue. We would organise it on a rota basis. Alternately, we would play mothers and fathers.
I would start a queue.
Do you mean that we're the whole four of us are on this island with this pretty girl, or each one of us solo?
Let's find out, then.
All five of us.
Oh, including...
Oh, you're there.
Good for you. All right. Well done.
I think he might win because some of the team here are suffering from youth deficiency.
I don't think... I mean, we'd actually, naturally, all of us have to do the chores.
What's chores?
Half a pint of beer. No, we naturally have to do, like, baking the... You know, making the fire up and making the beds. And
well, you get two Boy Scouts and rub them together.
No,
there's just
there.
The five of us.
There's only
but
five.
The girl, we wouldn't ask her to join in because she'd be too busy knitting.
This situation is not like being on a desert island. It's our own country that's had the earthquake and everything is destruction.
And there's just four of you and one girl.
We ought to start from zero. Now, the first thing we want is a parliament. Well, there'll be enough rubbish about to make a parliament, so we could do that easily.
Are you trying to tell me, Arthur, that the question is that everything's been destroyed? You mean the palace attic cliff was
gone? Yes, everything's gone.
The rotunda, Faversham?
All you get...
Town hall, Stony Stratford.
They've all gone.
All you get to eat is brontosaurus and chips.
Mr. Herbert, oh, no, Mr. Herbert, do you think... Mr. Herbert, do you think the team are paying enough attention to the young lady?
Well, if I were left with one young lady, I don't think they'd have much chance to pay any attention to them.
Well, you're so young.
Yeah, well, he's no good to me
by
because...
By the time you'd be 30 years, be our chance.
probably in the earthquake, I'll have lost my tablets. So...
See, one of the points is that members of the team here might have scruples.
Oh, I can get rid of them.
There's some ointment now, yeah.
Thank you, Prince.
Mr. Herbert, have you any suggestion as to how they should spend their time if they were with you, left with this one lady?
Recuperating.
Well, that's nonsense because there's five of us and only one of her. She's the one who's got to recuperate.
But think how grateful she'd be.
Otherwise, let's get the nearest bit of civilization. If the British Isles had an earthquake, would be France. Well, I'm a very strong swimmer. I should... Yeah, I am.
You're a friend of
I fire. Nearly swam to France once. I got halfway across.
You broke your pencil.
I got halfway across, and I had to go back and pay the water rates.
Do you know something, Mac?
Yeah, no, I don't,
there is a theory about the world being destroyed by some unforeseen and unforgettable explosion.
Yes.
And all that was left were two apes, and they met in the jungle. One was a male ape and the other one was a female ape. And he looked at her and said, have we got to start this business all over again?
Thank you, team, very much. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Arthur Raskin, and Ted Ray and Cyril Fletcher, and, of course, our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners, and, of course, our special guest, Joe Ross. This is the Donald Hobie saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.